Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
It's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday via podcastone.com and iTunes. Thank you for listening, downloading, streaming, and connecting with the podcast however you do. And I appreciate you listening, and I also would remind you to be sure to listen to me every day if you have Sirius XM, because I'm on every day live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, or on demand on the Sirius XM app whenever you would like. Check it out. And that's where a lot of the interviews you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast originate from. Give you just a little small sample of what I do on a daily basis on Sirius XM. Now this week, if you're listening, I'm broadcasting live from Cruise to the Edge, which is a cruise that focuses on progressive rock music, and it should be a lot of fun to be broadcasting from that. Tune in, hear me broadcast from a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean covering Prague. That's what I'll be doing at the time you're hearing this throughout this week. Also coming up February 13th, I'll be in Tulsa to host Saxon at the IDL Ballroom. And then at the end of February, I will be on the Monsters of Rock cruise along with Saxon and many other acts. It should be a lot of fun. I'll also be broadcasting live from that. Everything going on with me is on the homepage of eddietrunk.com. Music news updated daily there as well. And of course, social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just simply at my name. And there is a fan page there on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter available to you whenever you'd like. Good way to keep in touch. You can always email me as well. I do my best to read the emails. Sorry if I can't get back to each and every one of them. Eddie at eddietrunk.com is the email address. A lot of stuff going on. A busy, busy month of February between the two cruises and other things I got cooking. So just keep an eye on that social media, and I'll let you know everything going on as we go. A lot of reaction, a lot of people emailing me, tweeting me about the start of the Kiss Farewell Tour. Folks, I don't know what to tell you. If you are cool with it and like what you're seeing and hearing, go and enjoy it. If you are not, do not go and do not spend your money. It's as simple as that. I made the decision to check out of seeing Kiss about 16, 17 years ago when they started dressing Tommy and Eric as Ace and Peter. I cannot look at a man dressed as Ace Frehley singing Shock Me. I cannot look at a guy dressed as Peter Criss singing Beth at a piano. Cannot do it. No interest in seeing it or hearing it. It is a line that is crossed that is not for me. It's not the fault of Tommy and Eric. Said that a million times. It is not for me. And the rampant speculation, and in some cases blatant proof online of the alleged lip-syncing of Paul Stanley is quite a story that's circulating around in the news right now. There's rampant videos, and there's people breaking it down and analyzing him not near a mic with vocal coming out, especially in light of his very well-documented vocal issues in recent years, going out there and singing five nights a week and sounding pretty good. A lot of speculation. Is it Memorex or real? And don't look too real to even the most novice eye. Again, make of that what you will. I've talked about this nonstop. It is unbelievably wrong, in my opinion, for rock acts to go out there and play to pre-recorded tracks. It has become the norm in the world of pop. There was outrage when it first started happening in pop. Now it's widely accepted in most pop circles. To have it happen in Rock, when Rock is supposed to be live, real, and raw, is just horrendous. And there are a lot of bands doing it, and every indication is pointing to, you know, the lip-syncing of Paul Stanley, when he's a guy that, quite frankly, in interviews, took shots at other guys not being able to cut it, and took shots at other bands that have keyboard players or people covering the lead singer. So if you have the stones to do that, and then it's revealed that you yourself is singing to a track, woo! I don't know. But again, I checked out on all this stuff. I really did. I am deluged because I am known as being such a Kiss fan, and I still consider myself a Kiss fan, but I have no interest in getting involved in the drama. I will comment on it when asked. I have no interest in going to these shows without original members being there. And judging by what Ace Frehley unleashed about a week ago, there ain't no original members reuniting for this tour anytime soon. So it is what it is. If you guys like it and you don't care if there's tracks and you don't care if this is real and you don't care about set lists and stage and money and costs, go. Don't judge anybody for the decisions they make. If you're not liking what you're seeing, hearing, or what's going on, then don't go, like I opted to do a while ago. But, man, it's just, and I appreciate the fact that all the fans come to me with this sort of stuff. I can't even begin to tell you what my inboxes look like on my email, my Twitter feed, and what have you. But, you know, I've said my piece many times, so there's no need to rehash it. If it's for you, enjoy. If not, don't spend your money. There's plenty of other live music options out there, that's for sure. Including Rocklahoma, which is coming up, which I'll be hosting Memorial Weekend, and so many other events and so many other things going on. The Ride for Ronnie is coming. The Big Dio Cancer Fund fundraiser is coming in early May. We'll be doing some special stuff around that. So a lot of good things going on. Again, just keep up with the social media and I'll let you know what's going down. Now, a guy that could not ever be questioned for his singing ability is Paul Rodgers, the singer, one of the great singers of all time, and a guy who I think at 70 is still remarkably singing amazingly well. Whether it be Free, whether it be Bad Company, whether it be The Firm, any of the stuff that he's done. So here's what happened. I'm getting ready at the end of February to go down to South Florida before I board the Monsters of Rock cruise, and I'll be hosting a Tesla kick show at the Hard Rock in Hollywood the first Sunday of March. I don't have the date right in front of me. But anyway, I was getting ready to go down there, and I noticed Bad Company was playing just before I was about to get on the Monsters of Rock cruise, so I reached out to see if maybe we could do something with Bad Company down there in Florida, and it didn't work out for Paul's schedule. But his wife said to me, hey, we would still be open to having Paul on for an interview if you'd like to do it on the phone. I said, sure. So what you're about to hear is about a 40-45 minute conversation with a true rock icon who, beyond comprehension, has not been considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you can even process that, but is a class act. And like I said, the singer's singer. I don't care who you're a fan of. This is the guy that most singers look up to and respect and absolutely worship. And he still does it incredibly well. I talked to Paul Rodgers about Free, about Bad Company, about his solo band, about his time in Queen, about The Firm, about Jimmy Page. You're going to love this. I got a ton of great response to this interview, and I thank Paul and his wife, Cynthia, for their assistance in setting it up. So get ready. Again, this interview originally aired a couple weeks ago on my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation, which, again, is heard live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 Eastern time, on Channel 106 Volume. It replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. It's on demand on the SiriusXM app. You get just a little taste here on the podcast of what I'm doing daily on Volume. Hope you join me on SiriusXM if you are not already listening and you are in the U.S. and Canada. So Paul Rodgers, great conversation coming up in just a minute on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Every car comes with its share of stories. You know that, right? That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date. The luxury package you got after that big promotion. or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof, watch as they bump up your value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, right? But now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True Car cash offer, not available in all areas.
Celebrity Big Brother is back, and we've got recaps of every single episode here on Rob as a Podcast. So whether you watch for the epic blindsides or for the insanity like Ricky Williams giving a colon massage to a constipated Cato Kaelin, yes, that happened. Check out our Celebrity Big Brother coverage on Rob as a Podcast on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, or the Podcast One app.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get to it. I had a great phone conversation just a couple weeks ago with the legend Paul Rogers. Again, it was on my Sirius XM radio show, Trunk Nation on Volume. And without further ado, let's get it to you right now. The great Paul Rogers, ladies and gentlemen, on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. How are you, Paul?
I'm great, Eddie. How are you?
I'm very good. It's been a little bit. Do you remember when you did that show and those guys just sat there kind of like stammering, looking at you?
That was a great show. Thanks, man. That was about 5 years ago, wasn't it?
Probably, yeah, because it's been off the air about 3 years now, unfortunately. The whole channel went off the air, so unfortunately it is. But, yeah, we had a great time with you that day.
Well, thank you. I had a great time, too. Yes, indeed.
How you been, man? Where are you living these days? Are you in Canada?
I do live in Canada. We also have we winter in Palm Springs, so I'm here right now. We just did a show with Bad Company for the PGA with Sammy Hagar was on the night before us, and we played. It was wonderful.
That is awesome. Well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to get out of the cold. I'm in New York City right now, so you're a smart man being down in Florida at this time of year.
Yeah, I know. It's snowing back where we come from up in BC as well.
And yeah. I know that there's some Bad Company dates coming up, right, including one in Florida, February 22nd at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. So schedule-wise, you have some Bad Company stuff coming, right?
Yeah, well, this year we have Badco have selected 15 dates to play, and that's all. We'll play one show in Florida, three in Texas with ZZ Top, one in Seattle and one in Portland with Lynyrd Skynyrd, one in Minnesota, and four in California, one in New York State and one in Rhode Island, and two more to choose. So reason being, I would like to spend, and I really want to spend some time just making music instead of just making music. I'd love to do that.
So you want to record? You want to record new stuff?
I do, actually. I've got a lot of ideas floating around. I was just in the studio recently with Simon and knocking about some acoustic songs, and I'd like to focus on and see what we got, you know, with a view to doing something. Yeah, absolutely.
So it would be a new Bad Company record then?
Yeah, hopefully.
When I don't remember. How long has it been since you made a record with Bad Company, Paul?
Well, how long has it been since I made a record with Bad Company? It depends. Well, we've done live CDs and DVDs.
But a new studio record.
1999, we did the Hard Rock, yeah. Oh, we did four new tracks for the anthology.
Yes. Right. So it's been many, many years since there's been a new studio record, complete studio record with you and Bad Company.
Yeah, it has. I mean, things change. It's quite an undertaking to make a brand new album from scratch, because I just feel we have so much music anyway. And when I put a set together for Bad Company, there are so many songs. There's, you know, Rock and Roll Fantasy. There's so many. And I like to put a show together around what we have and make it a show and deliver it so that it's very strong, you know?
And the other great challenge, when I talk to artists who have tremendous catalogs, in your case, Bad Company, Free, and all the other stuff you've done, when I talk to a lot of artists that are in that situation, it's a bit of a catch-22 because creatively, they'd like to make new music. They want to create new music. They want to make a new record. But then when it gets released, I hear from a lot of them shortly after grumbling about the fact that nobody really plays it and it's hard to place in the live show because they've got so much of the catalog that people come to hear. So it is a bit of a balancing act. It is difficult. Some artists that I talk to who have been around for a long time say, I don't care creatively. I want to get it out. And there's others that kind of say, yeah, why bother? Because they can't really do much with it once it does come out. So sounds like your position is more in the camp of, hey, I want to get these songs recorded.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, actually, because I thought it was just us in that position. Apparently, there's a lot of people, too. I mean, you're almost competing with yourself. When you write new songs and you're competing with a massive amount of radio players, say for Shooting Star or, you know, Run with the Pack or Ready for Love and Feel Like Making Love, you know, and I'm up for the challenge right now. I really want to do that. So far we've sat back away from that because we didn't feel strong enough, you know, but I do feel that now is the time and it would be, it's time. It's time to move forward a bit. Even though I do believe we have a fantastic set right now, and it's what it is. It's pure Bad Company. It's only Bad Company. You mentioned Free and The Firm and all that. With Bad Company, I only play Bad Company. Except recently, I have added All Right Now from my Free days, from mine and Simon's Free days, and it fits very, very well with the Bad Company music.
You know, I saw you maybe a couple years ago in Florida at a festival. I didn't actually get to say hello to you, but I was in the crowd watching, and it was your own show. It was just billed as Paul Rogers.
Okay.
And I loved it because as much as I love Bad Company as well, in that context, you actually did play your whole catalog. You played Free.
Yeah.
You played some great stuff from The Firm. It really was the whole cross-section, and that's something I imagine you're still doing as well, right?
I am indeed. You know, I love to include Satisfaction Guaranteed, which is a song that Jimmy and I did in The Firm back then. And we have made it our own. Howard Leese does a great guitar thing at the front of that. And we've definitely, in the rhythm section, just locked tight, Todd Ronning and Rick Fedick, they just lock solid, and it's just some magic carpet ride, you know. So I love doing that, but I do kind of trying to keep the band separate. When I'm working with Free Spirit, for instance, it's just purely Free music. When I'm working with Bad Company, it's Bad Company music, except for the few exceptions. And then when I go out as Paul Rogers, as just myself, it's everything in. You know, it could be Muddy Water Blues, it could be any of the material from any of the bands, you know.
Now, you mentioned Howard Leese. As most people know Howard from his work with Heart, which he was in Heart for many, many years. But he plays with you both in your own band and has been playing in Bad Company as well, correct?
Correct, indeed, yeah.
And what is the status of Mick Ralphs these days, Paul?
Well, you know, Mick is, well, he's hospitalized right now and he's lost the use of his left arm. So that's really bad news down his left side, and he, you know, that's not really good news for him, but you know, he's still got his sense of humor and he's still laughing and joking over there, but he's a great guy and he's written great songs, but we pray for him, really.
That's unfortunate to hear.
Yeah. Paul,
I wonder this, you know, As I said, I saw you a couple years ago. I've seen some stuff on TV of you singing. I don't need to tell you how highly regarded you are as a singer and how influential you are as a singer, but to so many people. But what I think is just remarkable is that here now in 2019, after all these years at your age, you still. We see so many singers that lose a step, or as they get older, they lose a certain part of their voice or part of their range, or they can't do it, or they have other singers covering for them in the band or what have you. Anybody that's seen you knows that you are still as good as you've ever been. What do you feel as good as you've ever been, and what do you attribute that to?
Well, thank you. Th- thank you very much. I mean, I do feel very blessed. I mean, I'm blessed in the first place because in the very early days, I lived the life of a rock and roll singer, and like, I did everything that everybody does, and it's all bad for you, most of it. because I thought that's what you did, but I grew up a little bit, and I learned that, you know, there are certain things that are not good for your health, and I look after my health nowadays, and I sit back a little bit on what I've learned and what I understand about the mechanics, really, of singing, the mechanics of your body, and how you can stay healthy. And I do feel that it's not really about how stoned you can get and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's about getting in touch with the spirit. That's what we that's what we did early on. And despite all of the bad living that we did, the smoking, the drinking, and all the rest of it, despite all that, the spirit still rose, and we still found that spirit, and we touched that, and we got close to it, and it was a connection between the musicians, and then that between the musicians and the audience via the music, and that's still what really is key and very important. And as I get older, I realize that more and more, that is what it's about. It's about that connection, and all these songs that we have, they connect, they tell a story, and they take you somewhere. And I feel that when I listen to all my heroes like Otis Redding and Wilson Pickett and John Lee Hooker. I mean, they tell the story of their lives, and you go with it, and it's a good place to be.
Well, look, I mean, clearly, in addition to being an incredible singer, you've co-written some incredible songs throughout your career. So there's more to what you have to offer than just the voice. But your voice is what everyone talks about and celebrates. And you can have that spirit, but you and I both know that when you reach the age you are and some of these other artists, that a lot of these guys, it just changes. They won't sing certain things anymore. They can't sing certain things. They have to tune way down. They have to make adjustments. There's only a handful of guys. I just saw Glenn Hughes recently, who's a good friend. And I mean, he utterly floored me. He's one of the other few guys that I can think of that seemingly has lost nothing. Steven Tyler, who is 70, incredible. Sammy Hagar, incredible still what he can do. Also 70, 71 years old. But do you feel, are there things in your catalog that are harder for you now? Do you feel like you've lost anything, or do you feel like you're better than you've been because you have been so clean and sober?
Well, you know, thank you. There are... I've written songs with Andy Fraser and Free. We wrote all the songs for Free. I've written with Mick Ralphs. I've written with Jimmy Page. I've had some great co-writing partners. Excuse me. And I write myself, just, you know, like, for instance, Shooting Star. But there are some songs I don't really wish to sing anymore. I don't really like to deal with the preacher anymore because I'm not there. I'm not where the lyric is. And I don't feel I can put the passion into it that I felt at one time. But that's the only reason. When I listened to, I mentioned John Lee Hooker earlier and Albert King, they were performing their music until they died, really, until they dropped in their, you know, dropped where they rocked, I guess, or whatever the expression is. And I feel that that's possible if it comes from inside. It's really... how can I say this? If you're singing, there are some people that defy all the rules, I'll tell you. Because when I listen to Brian Johnson, for instance, and he's great. Actually, Bad Company played in Nashville recently with our friends Leonard Skinner. And the day before, I recorded Brian Johnson's TV show Live on the Road, and that guy has more energy than a kilo of sugar.
He's incredible. He's a wonderful guy, too. I know Brian. He's an awesome guy.
Oh, he really is. Yeah. We just had a love fest. And he's a fantastic interviewer. Because we discovered we have a very similar backgrounds coming from the northeast of England and all of that. You know, I mean, he'll say something to me like, oh, well, you know, when I was growing up, I had to get a trade. I said, oh, I should have done that, but I defied all that, and I just hit the road and did it. And he said, "Oh, yeah, well, lucky you got a head start on me." So because you did, you had a window of an opportunity when you were sort of 17 or 18. And if you missed that opportunity, you didn't start your trade, that was it. You didn't get a trade. And you didn't get a trade, you wouldn't get a job in the future. And that was the way it was in the northeast of England at that time. But anyway, he does defy all the rules, because when I first heard him sing, I thought, whoa, that guy, he sings so fantastic. He will not be able to do that. Well, when I met him, man, we jammed together. We did The Hunter, and he was just fantastic. Actually, him and Robert Plant got up when we did Free Spirit. We toured with Free Spirit in the UK. The both of them got up in Oxford, and we sang... Robert chose this song, Money. The best things in life are free.
Mm-hmm.
You can keep them for the birds and bees. Give me money. And then I had Robert Plant on one side and Brian Johnson on the other going, "That's what I want." It was amazing. And
awesome.
we switched lead roles, you know. It was just amazing. So the fans were like, "What?" Yeah. So I mean, you know, you can make as many rules as you like, but there are people that break those rules. I was going to say that, you know, it's more than physical, really. I think I don't want to go on and on and on about the spirit, but if you do touch the spirit, it's like it's coming through you, not because of you. It's just like it's flowing through you, and if you let it do that, I think hopefully you can do it forever.
Do you remember the first time you sang for an audience?
Yes, I do, actually. Sussex Street Youth Club, the wrong side of the tracks. It was on the other side of the railway in Middlesbrough with the Roadrunners. I think we might have been called the Titans at that time, because whatever it said on the drummer's skin, you know, the bass skin,
mm-hmm.
That's what we named the band. And anyway, I sang... The Searchers, just a little rain falling from the sky. That's as far as I'll go. It's not a very strong song. I was playing bass at that time. But then I sang, they asked me to sing a Little Richard song, and I went, "Good golly, Miss Molly," and I did something like that. And they said, "Okay, you're the singer."
So up until that point, you had no design. Up until that point, you had no designs to be a lead singer. You just kind of fell into it.
No, I wanted to be a bass player, and they like put the bass down. You're the singer now. So I said, "Oh, okay."
Yeah. And from there, it went and went and went. And here we are talking about Bad Company shows coming up and making a new Bad Company record and all this amazing stuff that you have going on and decades and decades later and still doing it so remarkably well. It's incredible. It really is.
Thank you. I mean, I'm actually living the life. Music has been my whole life, and it would seem that it's going to be the rest of my life too. That's fine with me. When I used to listen to a lot of blues, a lot of soul, they talked about another world to me. You know, I was up in the northeast of England. In those days, it was very grim and polluted and smoky and all the rest of it, because there's steelworks, shipbuilding, and chemical works, and that's your life, really. And music, really, all these songs were telling me of another world, another life, another existence, jumping on a train and being in the next town. I think I'm going to leave this morning. All that stuff, you know. And I loved that. And that's what I searched for when I hit the road when I was 17.
We're talking with Paul Rodgers. Paul has some dates coming up. February 22nd with Bad Company at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. February 23rd, Welsh, Minnesota. There's more shows. Just go to paulrodgers.com to see all the dates, whether they be his own shows or Free Spirit or, of course, with Bad Company. Paul, if I can put you on hold, I'd love to chat for a bit longer, if that's okay with you.
That's okay with me.
Coming back with more with Paul Rodgers after this on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you like my show, you're going to love Rob Has a Podcast on Podcast One. Join the biggest reality TV podcast around as Survivor's Rob Sister Nino covers the current season of Celebrity Big Brother and more. Download Rob Has a Podcast every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's rejoin Paul right now, who joins us on the phone. So, Paul, I wanted to mention, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Free, because you touched on this before. You performed a show at Royal Albert Hall, which I know came out, was a very successful DVD and CD, where you went and essentially played a bunch of Free material. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. We toured England, and we finished at the Albert Hall. And recorded that show and released it as a DVD. Quarter Valley Records did a most fantastic job. They put it out on vinyl for us as well as a DVD. They've done a great job. So we did a tour. The way that came about was my wife and I, Cynthia, we support Willows. It's an animal sanctuary up in the north of England towards Scotland there. And it is... it's an animal sanctuary and assisted therapy. Their motto there is people helping animals, helping children. They've got horses, they've got all kinds of farmyard animals, they've got every kind of animal, and they pretty much don't turn anything away. So they're a wonderful family operation. And anyway, we did a couple of shows in support of them and raised some funds to help them feed the animals and all of that. And I did it with Deborah Bonham and Deborah Bonham's band with Pete Bullock in there. And that became Free Spirit. We played a lot of Free music, and they played it so well that I said to them, you know, one day we'll tour this, guys, okay? Mark your cards. And so we did. We toured that, and it was amazing. The fans were fantastic. They hadn't seen Free for a long, long time. And of course, this was not Free, but it was definitely the spirit of Free. And it was a beautiful thing.
I think for people listening here in the U.S. and Canada, I don't think they quite realize the impact Free had. Here in the U.S., of course, everybody knows All Right Now, and it's a huge song still to this day. But it was a very different thing in the U.K., was it not? I mean, you guys really had a mania. They called it Free Mania, from what I understand. Yeah. Talk a little bit about what Free meant at that time and the impact that band had there.
Well, you know, it runs so deep. I'm still finding out the depth, because a lot of musicians, even Queen, when I worked with Queen, they were saying, wow, you know, Free was such a big influence on Freddie. They just about wore the album Fire and Water. They wore it out listening to it. Excuse me. And so many people come up to me and say, wow, Free, Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, Sammy Hagar. A lot of people, they say, were really influenced by Free music, and we were not aware of it at the time, but it seems to be very much, it's growing, and it's quite amazing. So there was a period of time when there was Free Mania, and we couldn't get into the venues. I remember up in Sunderland Lacana one time, we had to sneak through the kitchens, and you know those things that they call dumb waiters? They're like an elevator for delivering the food from the kitchen up to the top, you know? Well, we had to get in one of those individually, one by one. We had to and get the roadies to pull us up into stage level, because it was that crazy. I mean, it was a wonderful time, and we learned a lot of lessons. It was great.
Did Free do much in America in terms of touring and working here, Paul?
Well, the only thing we did of any significance really was we toured with Blind Faith. We were the support band with Blind Faith. That's, you know, Clapton. Who was in Blind Faith again? Ginger Baker. Yeah, it was
right.
Kind of Cream. Cream without Jack Bruce. And with...
Steve Winwood.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. And we toured with those guys, and it was kind of a bit of a bedlam for us, because being opening the show, we didn't get our own equipment, blah, blah, blah. And I remember we played at Madison Square in the round, it was the days that the anti-Vietnam days, and people were very much against authority and any kind of authority, and there was kind of riots going on. And when we played at Madison Square, the stage turns around so that one minute you're looking at the band, and then you're looking at the back of the band with all behind the drums and everything else. And it got stuck. The crowd did not like this. And you know, the police actually, in their defense, they tried to spin it manually, and it was just chaos. And of course, the crowd went nuts. And we could hear like the crack of truncheons on people's heads in the corridors. And they were like, "Oh my God, this was so violent to us coming from England." We were gobsmacked and shocked, really. But that was our experience, and we went with our tail between our legs a little bit and said, "Wow, America's a big place." You know, so when I learned from that, I learned, and when I put Bad Come together with Mick Rowles, I said, you know, one of the things we did not have was we didn't have proper management. We were managing ourselves, and we didn't have the proper equipment and all of this sort of stuff. And so when we put Bad Company together, I called Peter Grant because he managed the biggest band in the world at the time, Led Zeppelin. And I thought, well, he'll do. He's the guy for us. Talk about arrogance, eh? But fortunately, he was interested, and he said, I'll come down and see the band. And he came down. We were practicing in a little village hall in England, deep in the heart of the country, you know. And we played and played, waiting for him. We were actually auditioning bass players at that time. And we still didn't have Boz. We did not have Boz. And so Peter didn't show up, and we were all bummed out because we said, well, look, we finished the rehearsal. He didn't even show up. And then the doors burst open at the back of this little rehearsal place, village hall, and in walks Peter Grant. And he goes, "Oh," he says, "sorry I'm late. I've been listening outside, actually." So what he did, he sat in the car with the window open. He was listening to us outside. And that was our audition. And he liked what he heard. We played Can't Get Enough, Rock Steady, Bad Company, and a couple of things. And so he said, well, he says, you know, you don't know me, and I don't know you, so we won't have a contract between us. We'll just do this on a handshake, and we'll do it for 3 months and see how we go. And I thought about it for about a second and a half. I stuck my hand out, and we shook hands on it, and that was all we ever had. We didn't have a contract between us. It was just a gentleman's agreement, if you like. You know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And he was fantastic. He was really, really amazing because he got his rehearsal rooms in King's Road and got us our first tour. And we were in stadiums straight away, and we were really looked after. We were in, we had a Vickers Viscount, which is an airplane, full Rolls Royce engines. And what it did, they'd stripped it out and put TVs and beds and blah, 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 and all this stuff in there. And it was just amazing for us. And we flew from one show to the next, and there was limousines on the tarmac to meet us and take us to the next show. And it was an amazing wild ride. The album, the Badco album, was kind of 99 in the charts when we set out, and by the end of the tour, it was number one. So it was a wild and crazy ride.
And of course, you would sign to Zeppelin's label, Swan Song, the first band to be signed to Zeppelin's own label. Was that a handshake deal too?
No.
That was a contract,
Eventually, eventually, once we'd proved each other. You know, there was a contract and all of that. Yeah, sure. At that point, yes.
So was it, I mean, I imagine it had to be a pretty cool experience at that point to be the first signing to the biggest rock band in the world's record label, you know?
It was unbelievable because we played at Finsbury Park Astoria. I think it's had different names before and since then, but I think it was called the Rainbow Rooms at one time, but we played there in Finsbury Park. We looked off to the side of the stage, and who is standing there with Peter Grant is all of the Led Zeppelin guys, Jimmy and Robert, and all of them. And I was just like, whoa. And the audience was going nuts anyway. And I said, come on stage, man. And they went, no, we're not coming on. Come on, I said, come on. And they came on, and the place just erupted. And we had a big jam session. We jammed a lot of blues because we have that in common. It's a great thing about the blues, actually. You can sort of call out, do you know Spoonful? What about, 4 o'clock in the morning? Or Hoochie Coochie Man, you know. And everybody kind of knows it, and you can jam on it. And that's what we did. It was a blast.
And, of course, your history and friendship and relationship with the Zeppelin camp and Jimmy Page in particular would continue years later when you guys did The Firm together. How did The Firm come about, and how do you look back at those records? And is it something that, Jimmy has been out there kind of for a few years now saying he wants to do something, he wants to do a band, he's looking for a singer, but it never seems to really materialize. Do you think there could be any chance, and would there ever be any interest from you in sort of revisiting that?
No one's asked me. I mean, I often see Jimmy. He comes to our shows when we play at the Albert Hall. He comes there. And we went to see him. We had dinner with him over at, he's got a house in over in London there. And I mean, he's the greatest guy in the world. They all are. They're fantastic people. And I always thought it was so great of them, at the height of their fame, to turn around and make their own little record company and help other talent, give us a leg up, as it were. They really give us a boost. Just to be associated with Led Zeppelin was a huge boost, because people said, well, who are these guys? At least they listen. That's all we wanted, just listen, And we weren't instantly dismissed, you see. So it was a great, and they're still very supportive. I went to see, I saw Robert in London just recently. We had breakfast, actually, over at there, and it was great to see the guys. I love Robert. He's always thinking outside the box musically, and the band he's got is incredible. I mean, you listen to it, 1 minute you're in like deepest India, and the next minute, they might be doing and they do it in such a cool way. It's just great. Well, Jimmy, Jimmy's complicated. He's got a lot of music in him, and he's got a lot of love for the music and love for the fans too. I think if you leave it too long, the longer you leave it, the harder it is to get back in. I think what he should just do is just go and play, just go out, do it. And that's what I'll tell him next time I see him, I think.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, Paul. I have seen and talked to and personally know a lot of artists who have kind of sat on the sideline 10, 15, 20 years. And as we both know, being active in this, in your end of it and in my end of it, things change so much and the business is so different now, even as different than it was 5 years ago. So when you're on the sidelines for a while, it's really hard to figure out how to get your toe back in it. And then sometimes you get back in it and you don't like how it is and you kind of recoil again and go back into hiding. But he seems like, I've been to some events with some of the Zeppelin reissues that he's done recently and everything, and he's always saying, I'm going to do something. I've got a lot of music and what have you. I just need to find the right situation. Yeah. And, it would seem to be, I think it would be, speaking as a fan, it would be wonderful if he called someone like you and revisited the whole thing again, and whether it be called The Firm or something else, just somebody that he clearly had a good working relationship with.
I'd be only too happy. I mean, I would love to do that. Jimmy is so great in the studio. He gets such a good acoustic sound too, which not a lot of people have sort of taken much note of, because he's known as a heavy rocker in many ways. But Led Zeppelin always had an acoustic spot in the center of their show, which was a highlight really, because it accentuated the heaviness when they did get heavy. And light and shade, dynamics. And I love that about Jimmy and the way he does that with music. I'd definitely be up to do something with him. Yeah,
that contrast is exactly right. I mean, in Zeppelin's case, I'm just listening to some of the stuff on Zeppelin 3. And I remember Tony Iommi, who's a friend, told me many times, he said, people talk about how heavy Sabbath is. He said, we wouldn't have sounded that heavy if we didn't contrast it at times with some of the different sort of things that we did in those songs, which sometimes get overlooked. And he's spot on about that.
I do believe, you know, dynamics are a very big part of rock and roll. And we learned that from the blues, because when you listen to blues guys, they kind of speak to each other with their instruments. The drummer's talking to the bass player, and the bass player talking to the keyboard, and they're speaking with their music and communicating, and that goes out and communicates to the audience. So there's so many levels going on. They're speaking to each other, and they're aware that this is connecting to the audience too. There's so many levels of energy, and I think that's a vital part of a successful show, is all the levels of energy going on.
Paul, just a few more minutes. I won't keep you too much longer. I really appreciate all the time here, but I'll tell you, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your time in Queen, because it's pretty remarkable what's going on with Queen right now. I make the case, and I stand behind this, that I don't know if Queen has been bigger or more prominent, at least in America, in 40 years than they are now, coming off of this film, selling out two nights in advance at Madison Square Garden. It's incredible what's going on. How do you look back at your time working with Queen? Because I went to a few of those shows. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I loved what you brought to that band. What is your, I know you've got a history and friendship with those guys. What's your remembrances about working with them at the time?
Well, it was a wild ride, I'll tell you. It came out of the blue, and when Brian asked me to if I wanted to do a couple of shows just for fun in Europe, I was pretty taken aback, and I must say my first reaction was, well, I really don't see that. But then I said to myself, well, it's a challenge. Let me see if I can do it, you know. Maybe I'm chickening out here. So I did it, and it turned into 4 years, actually. We toured all over the place. We toured the world twice. And we finished off with a studio album of all original material, so it was a wild and crazy ride, as they say, and we are still friends, and I love the guys. What was I going to say? Jim Beach is their manager, is a very intelligent man indeed, and I think he's guided them very, very well. They were one of the few groups that kept their own publishing. Everybody in the world that I ever saw got taken for their publishing, quite frankly, and they didn't. They still kept their rights to their songs. And when I sort of joined forces with them, they were not touring. They were doing one-off gigs. They were big one-off gigs, you know, with Elton John, with David Bowie, you know, at Wembley, but they weren't touring. And with me, what we did, we went out. They wanted to play 50% of their music and 50% of mine. And I said to them, you know, people haven't seen Queen live for a long time. We should make it Queen heavy. So we did four or five of my songs. I think we did All Right Now. We did Wishing Well. We did Fire and Water. We did actually Bad Company at one point.
Really?
And I raised up through. Yeah, we did it Queen style though. There was I elevated through the stage on a hydraulic lift with smoke and lasers and everything, and we played the song. And I was being elevated by this piano, by this what do you call it, hydraulic lift, and I'm playing the song. Dang, dang, dang. And I can look up and I can see all the lights and the edge of the crowd at the top. And I look down and I'm not stage level with the stage yet. And there's a guitarist, namely Brian May, has fallen down the hall, and the piano is lying on the end of the piano. I'm like, what?
Oh my gosh.
What do you do? Do you keep playing or do you stop playing? And I thought, well, They hit the emergency stop button, because you have to, because with those hydraulic lifts, if you've got anything hanging over, a finger, a toe, a leg, it'll chop it off.
Yeah.
And so they had to hit the... So it's stuck halfway, and I'm playing. There's Brian. And bless him, he fell with his guitar. He fell the way a guitarist would fall to keep his guitar in tune. At great cost to his elbows, he kept the neck high. You know what I mean? So that it didn't break and it didn't even go out of tune.
Right.
So there he was. The roadies jumped in, helped him out, got him patched back up, and then we hit the button again, and up I went. We continued on. So it was a little Spinal Tap in its way, but yeah. It was very exciting. But, you know, it was great. It was good.
From a vocal standpoint, to approach Freddie's music, you know, one of the things that people said when you were a part of that was, well, Paul Rodgers doesn't really sing like Freddie Mercury, which, you know, you don't really, but you both had, and you, of course, still have these phenomenal voices. But I thought your approach to that material really worked. I really liked it. I thought it did it justice. I thought it still was Queen, but it also had elements of what you brought to it. Talk a little bit about your approach vocally to singing the Freddie stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of people hadn't had the opportunity to see Queen live. So one of the things that we did was give them that opportunity. And yeah, you know, I'm not Freddie. And the reason is that I told this to Brian Johnson, too. When Brian was joined AC/DC, I read an interview, and he was very nervous before he went on. And Malcolm had said to him, look, just go on and be yourself. And I read that, and I thought, wow, that's great advice. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go on, and I'm going to be myself. I'll interpret the songs as me, not as somebody trying to be someone else. And that's the way I looked at it, and that's the way I went with it. But having said that, I went into working with Queen with a lot of respect for Freddie, and I came out of it with even more. I think he was such a great performer.
And have you had a chance to see the band now with Adam Lambert?
Oh, no, I haven't actually, no. I haven't even seen the movie. I must go and see it.
Yeah, what's happening with the film, it's the highest grossing music biopic of all time. I mean, it's you know, when this movie was announced, I knew it would do tremendous business around the world because Queen was always, and you can attest to this because I've seen videos of you performing with Queen in places around the world where just 100,000 people, just crazy crowds. To me, yeah. Queen has always meant more outside of the U.S. They're certainly popular in the U.S., don't get me wrong, but it's a totally different thing in other parts of the world. So I knew the film would do well outside of America, but what it's done in America as recently as winning another award last night is just shocked the hell out of me. And what it's done for them as far as the touring opportunities here is just incredible. So it really is remarkable what's happened with them all these decades later. And, you know, Brian and Roger just having a whole renaissance coming off of this movie.
Yeah, it's great. It's just a runaway success. And they still got it going on. I mean, it was great for me. I was at the end of the thrust. There's a big thrust in front that sticks out into the audience. And I would turn around, and we'd be, I want to break free. And then I'd turn around, and there'd be Brian go, quack, 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 quack. You know, that great sound that he gets. And, I mean, he does have an amazing sound. Yeah.
Yeah, anytime you hear Brian May, you know it's Brian. That's for sure.
That's right. I mean, and the songs are very strong. The song they had, when I sort of went joined with them, they had everything going on. They had all the songs. They had the sound. They had the monster hits, arena-style hits. They had everything going on. But they just lacked that front man. And I saw myself as the final piece in the jigsaw in many ways.
I think it's brilliant that they still have their publishing because just the other day, three of four TV commercials that came on in one cluster had Queen songs in them. I said, somebody's killing on publishing right now.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Paul, would you ever like to write a book, your story?
People have asked me about writing a book, and I'm very tempted, I must admit. So it'd probably be quite nice to recap. I always said that the only way I would write a book is with a tape recorder lying on a beach in somewhere like Hawaii, and I just talk, and then someone makes a book out of it.
Well, that's been done.
I might just do that.
Yeah, that's possible, and that's been done before. Books, you know, people have done them like that. And I recently interviewed Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, and he wrote an autobiography, and he hand wrote with pen and paper every word of it. Not a computer, not typed, hand wrote, and then handed that over to someone and said, okay, now make the book.
Wow, respect. Holy smokes.
Bruce went totally old school the way he did his. So, and the last thing before I let you go, and I promise you, and I know this is something that you have no control over, but I just have to say for the record, it is criminal and ridiculous that both Bad Company and Free have yet to be considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Does it bother you the way it bothers us fans?
Well, no, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, I just keep rocking on, you know, and I'm loving my life. It's the, I mean, one of the things about the Hall of Fame, I understand, is that it's not fan-driven. It's a corporate entity, and they make corporate decisions, and who knows how those decisions come about. It really doesn't bother me.
Well, as it shouldn't, Paul, because you certainly don't need them to justify or vindicate your incredible career, and the fans know what you've done and what you've given us and continue to give us. So I thank you for all the time here today. Again, I'll remind everybody to go to paulrogers.com, check out the Free Spirit, the DVD and CD that has come out, hopefully and potentially a new Bad Company record coming soon, tour dates including February 22nd, Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida, February 23rd, Minnesota. There are other shows. There's a cruise in there. That's all on paulrogers.com, and you can find out all the information there. Paul, again, thank you so much for the time. I hope to see you in a few weeks in South Florida.
Thank you, Eddie. My pleasure.
Take care, okay?
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. Well, man, I hope you enjoyed that. That was really, really special. A chance to spend some time with a true legend and a great singer, and obviously, as you heard, a gentleman as well, the great Paul Rogers. My thanks to him for the time we had there, and hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I know I did. You know, I get a certain jolt after having a chance to spend time and interview true legends like that, and I certainly got that buzz after having done that interview. So thanks to Paul. Look forward to whatever he has cooking for 2019. Thank you for listening, as always, to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, wherever, whenever, and however you do it. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She is the producer of this podcast. And, of course, be sure to follow me on social media, Twitter, where I am most active. There's also an Instagram page, just at my name, at Eddie Trunk, and there's a fan page on Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. All sorts of news and info updated daily in the world of rock right on that page. All my appearances on the homepage. Trunk Report is my blog, and a lot more. All check it out on EddieTrunk.com. You guys have a great week. I'll catch you again next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Free as always, PodcastOne.com and iTunes.
As you rev up your engines with the start of NASCAR racing season, Podcast One is your pit stop for the best car podcasting around. Team up with Adam Carolla and friends on CarCast as they explore all aspects of the automotive space. Then drive into the pit stop to talk motorsports with Shift and Steer. Then speed to the finish line and Spike's Car Radio as comedy writer Spike Ferriston hosts a roundtable with his celebrity friends about all things cars. Download CarCast, Shift and Steer, and Spike's Car Radio every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.